2019 Chicago Mayoral Candidates Forum. Live on 720 WGN, WGNradio.com, and your WGN radio app. Tonight's event is presented by Cranes from Venue 610. With the opening remarks, here's Cranes publisher Jim Kirk.
Good evening. Jim Kirk, publisher and executive editor of Cranes Chicago Business. We are delighted you could join us for the fourth Future of Chicago program. You know, a big open race for Chicago's next mayor is an event similar to a solar eclipse. It doesn't happen too often. For the first time since 2011, there's no incumbent running for this year's election. The race for mayor is the biggest political story in town right now. Almost the biggest. And tonight, I'm glad somebody got that. Tonight you will hear from nine mayoral candidates appearing on this month's ballot. They will give you their perspective on what the future of Chicago means and why they deserve your vote to be our next mayor. We want to cover a range of topics, including public safety, budget and finance, and jobs and economic development. There's a lot to cover, so we'll need to move things along here. Tonight's forum is made possible by the support of our event sponsors. Our first co-sponsor, Leadership Greater Chicago. Leadership Greater Chicago is a premier civic leadership development program in Chicago. It convenes, connects, and mobilizes the city's most prominent leaders around key socioeconomic issues through its signature Fellows program, an intensive 10-month program in which fellows learn from a diversity of opinions, styles, and worldviews, and develop the capacity to approach and break down complex problems to drive transformative change. Joining us today from LGC is Chief Executive Officer Maria Nguyen. Maria, please stand. Our second co-sponsor is Kivett, a nationally recognized public affairs and strategic communications firm led by professionals who have decades of experience in government, media, corporations, and political campaigns. They move public opinion, shape policy conversations, and improve business outcomes. Kivett is led by managing partner Eric Sedler. Eric, please stand. And finally, our presenting sponsor, AARP Illinois, is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to improving lives for those 50-plus and their families. With 250,000 members in Chicago and 1.7 million members nationwide, AARP is working to ensure Chicago's next mayor has a plan to address the issues that matter most to all older adults in the city. Please help me welcome AARP Illinois State Director Bob Gallo to the stage to say a few words. Bob.
Thanks, Jim, and good evening to all of you out there and up there. And just one minor correction, that 1.7 million AARP members is here in Illinois. That's 40 million AARP members in the United States. So we're thrilled to be here and to represent our members, particularly those in Chicago. And it's an honor to stand before you today on behalf of AARP Illinois. Whether or not you have a membership card in your wallet today, looks like this. AARP touches your life and business more than you probably know. We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization with 250,000 members in Chicago alone, as Jim pointed out. Our members are adults age 50 plus who matter. It's a group that may have only made up 34% of Illinois' population in 2015, but the households that laid lead accounted for 46% of Illinois' GDP. What did this economic contribution for older adults mean for Illinois? 4 million Illinois jobs, $222 billion of labor income, and $33.1 billion in state and local taxes. And those are just the numbers. AARP Illinois members are also 1.7 million older adults across the state, making an impact in their homes, families, and communities. Some are volunteering with the AARP Foundation's Experience Corps here in Chicago, driving several times a month to CPS classrooms to tutor children, dramatically improving the literacy rates of those students so that they may go on to further academic success in their careers. Some of them lobby legislators about transportation issues by telling real stories about riding the bus, sharing worries about how they'll afford their utility bills, and demanding public safety solutions so they can stay in their Chicago homes. And some act as family caregivers. That might be some of you out there, using helpful resources AARP makes available, movies for grown-ups, tax aid to caregiving conferences, and those movies for grown-ups allow them much-needed break from the stress of making life comfortable for the people that they happen to love. On average, family caregivers spend $7,000 per year on out-of-pocket expenses related to caregiving. Because too often, those viable contributing members of our society and economy have been overlooked by political leaders and community influencers. We recently conducted a survey asking Chicago's older voters what issues matter most to them during this mayoral election. We thank several of the candidates here tonight for agreeing to meet with us one-on-one to discuss these results, and we look forward to scheduling time with the others who we've not heard back from. Those of you in the audience will also soon receive an email from us with the survey, so please feel free to share it widely. Until then, it's our pleasure to co-present this mayoral forum today, and we hope that the candidates and all of you here will be reminded that people 50-plus are a powerful voting block, anxious for real solutions that allow older adults and their families to live and age comfortably in this great city. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Bob. Prior to this evening's event, we asked Cranes readers to submit questions for our panel via social media, hashtag CranesMayoral. We will not be taking live questions this evening and do ask that everyone in tonight's audience refrain from speaking during the panel. Tonight's event is being broadcast by our terrific media partner, WGN Radio. For 95 years, WGN has dedicated itself to be the number one source of Chicagoland news, information, entertainment, and sports. Listen at AM 720, online at WGNradio.com, on the WGN Radio app, smart speakers, or tune in. Co-moderating this evening is WGN's Ana de Vlantes. You can applaud for that. A Chicago native and seven-time Emmy Award-winning journalist who has broken big stories and passionately told small stories, her investigative reporting has exposed corruption and wrongdoing that has prompted major investigations and reform. Ana joined WGN Radio in 2014 and now co-hosts the Rokan Show with Ana de Vlantes on weekday afternoons. At 7:30 p.m. and at 8 p.m., Ana will ask the panelists to pause for a brief station break on WGN. This is live radio. We do ask that all audience members remain seated during this time. Our second co-moderator for the evening is Cranes political reporter Greg Hines. Graduate of Northwestern University's Medill School of Journalism, Greg has been with Crane since 1996. He covers City Hall, state government, and the metropolitan areas, congressional delegations, and the elections that determine who runs these governments. He writes a weekly column for the print edition of Crane's, but spends most of his time blogging on Crane's website. Cranes invited this evening's candidates based on a number of factors, including their varied stances on the issues we will discuss. We kept a number of the forum participants to 9 in order to allow enough time to hear each candidate's point of view. Please join me in welcoming our moderators and candidates to the stage. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Jim. As the candidates make their way out here to the stage, we want to thank you here for being with us at Venue 610, this beautiful venue. We also want to thank our listeners joining us on WGN Radio, as we are, in fact, broadcasting this live. So we'll need your help a little bit in just pausing during the breaks. We also welcome our people who are listening on the stream, on the app, through their smart speakers, and WGNradio.com as well. We hope that it will be an informative evening, as there are some important decisions to be made for our city. Quick note on format, now that the candidates are seated, before we begin, the candidates will each have 1 minute, 60 seconds, exactly that time, to answer each of 4 questions. We'll then allow a brief final statement of 45 seconds. And if you go over your allotted time, you will hear the bell. There it is. You hear the bell? 60, or then we might bring out the cowbell if it really gets bad. But hopefully, in 60 seconds, you'll wrap it up quickly so that we can move on and get to everybody on all of these questions and keep on broadcast time as well. We should mention any candidate who is not here on stage with us today has been invited to get equal time and come to WGN Radio and answer the exact questions that are being asked of our candidates tonight. All right, let's introduce the candidates in alphabetical order. They are attorney and former chair of the Board of Education, Gary Chico. Former U.S. Secretary of Commerce, former Chief of Staff under President Obama, Bill Daley. Thank you. West Side activist and director of the Austin Chamber of Commerce, Amara Enya. Former federal prosecutor, former president of the Chicago Police Board, Lori Lightfoot.
And moving on down the row, former Chicago Police Superintendent Gary McCarthy. Former State Representative and current Illinois State Controller Susana Mendoza. Former Alderman and current President of the Cook County Board, Tony Preclickle. Former Chicago Schools CEO Paul Vallis. And businessman and self-made millionaire, Willie Wilson. So you came to hear them rather than me. So let's get down to it. The issue of corruption has exploded as an issue in this campaign since it got started. Almost every one of you up there has thrown a brick or several bricks in the direction of some of your opponents. So let's get down to it. What is your plan to restore integrity to City Hall? And why are you the person most on this stage who should be trusted by the people of Chicago to actually accomplish that? Mr. Chico.
Thank you very much. And appreciate Cranes and WGN providing this forum to us to talk about these important issues. I think we need to do three things. One, end the aldermanic privilege, which is at the heart of all of these matters that are being exposed right now in the City Council. Secondly, ban all outside income. You work for the City of Chicago, that's your income. It's about $120,000 a year. That's enough for anybody. And finally, term limits. But ladies and gentlemen, listen to me. None of this will be done by the City Council unto itself. People don't act that way. I've made a proposal called the Chicago Voter Initiative to take each of these reforms to the voters of this city by binding referendum to make sure that it actually becomes the law of the City of Chicago. You're the bosses, not us. And when we take this matter to the ultimate bosses in this city, we will bring reform, and it needs to happen right away.
Thank you. Mr. Daley.
Yes. I think it was the first day after I announced my candidacy for mayor, I laid out a series of ethics reforms, term limits, no lobbyist could work for my campaign and then lobby. I would not take money from any lobbyist even in a campaign, even though legal, unless you're the incumbent mayor. I laid out a series of reforms there. No family members could do any business with city government or any agencies that I would be overseeing. And then also I laid out, I think we're at a point in this city that we have to look at structural reforms to the way the city council works. I recommended we shrink the city council to 15 members. Full-time jobs, no outside income, transparency. Any alderman approaches a person in an agency of the government, it has to be recorded. When I was Commerce Secretary, if I got a letter or a call from a senator or a congressman, that was recorded. That's transparent. I think I'm the person who could do it. I've had the experience in business and government, and I know how to do this right.
Ms. Enya.
Thank you. So one of the overarching principles is to not have existing ties with those who've been part and parcel of the corruption in City Hall. That is the first criteria. Second, we have to institutionalize corruption mitigation measures. What that looks like is taking all of the controls, administrative functions, out of the hands of legislators. In many instances, aldermen are making decisions about signs for their businesses, for small business owners. They create opportunities for corruption or where business owners feel that they are shaken down. Those administrative functions need to be moved into executive departments in City Hall. Second, aldermanic privilege, making sure that we eradicate that because it has been a tool that has actually been quite harmful in terms of how development happens in the city, who gets access to decision-making in the city, and many other things that have happened where we're experiencing a lot of corruption. Third is expanding the oversight of the Inspector General. The Inspector General should be able to investigate city council members across the board. That has to happen. And fourth is a commitment to transparency across the board.
Okay, but why you rather than any of these other people?
So the first criteria that I laid out is not having ties to existing individuals and systems that have been part and parcel of corruption in City Hall. I do not have those ties.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Lightfoot.
Well, I think what we've been witnessing over the last month or so is the crumbling remnants of a broken Chicago machine coming into the fore. And what I've heard from people all over the city is, frankly, they are sick and tired of the give-to-get style of government. I'm a former federal prosecutor who put a corrupt alderman into federal prison long before most of the people on the stage got into the race. Back in August, I put forward a good government plan. Things that we're now talking about were a part of that plan. Term limits for mayor, making sure that we took back control of the workers' compensation system, not allowing elected officials and appointed officials to monetize their positions, making sure that we had a government that was not only accountable to the people, but also transparent. In the last 7 years, we've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars fighting FOIA suits that eventually the city lost and had to pay out legal fees. So those are the kinds of things that I think are critically important to make sure that we are leading our government in the right direction.
Mr. McCarthy.
So first of all, we have to have leadership that is intolerant of aberrant behavior. We need integrity on the fifth floor to start with, because it shouldn't be do as I say, not as I do. If you take a look back at what has happened over the years, the Inspector General for the City Council could not get the powers because they had to ask for the City Council to give it to them. So I propose what we're going to do is expand the powers of the Inspector General, just like some of my colleagues said, except in this case, we're going to just staff it with police officers to do the investigations so they can just go lock people up when they have to. And why me? I've locked up a lot of people in my life. I've locked up police officers because I spent 2 years as a captain in internal affairs. But we do need to end aldermanic prerogative. We also need term limits. But we need a culture that is intolerant of the Chicago way. We laugh at it. We wink about it. We say, hey, I got a guy. I can get something done. We as a culture have to get away from that.
Okay, moving on. Again, the question is, what's your plan to restore integrity to Chicago City Government? Why are you the best person up there to do it? Ms. Mendoza.
Thank you. Well, I have the most comprehensive anti-corruption ethics and accountability plan of any of the mayoral candidates to date. You can read about it on my Future Now plan. But it's been informed also by the help of a former federal prosecutor, Dan Webb, who locked up more corrupt politicians and judges than anyone in the history of Illinois. And he was the lead prosecutor in Operation Greylord, which many people here probably remember. I also believe that at the core of everything that we do with this, we have to get rid of aldermanic prerogative. It is the single most important reason why aldermen end up getting convicted in the city of Chicago. And I think almost every candidate running for mayor today agrees that this has to end, with the exception of President Preckwinkle, who still defends it. I think it's a policy of the past. And if we believe that we need to clean up corruption, it starts with that. I have a slew of other things, like ending jobs, Shacknik-exempt positions for the children or the family members of elected officials. Yes, thank you.
But again, I'm going to go back to the question, why you? You hired Dan Webb, good guy, but why you?
Sure, because I put forth the most comprehensive plan. And I would say that in any job that I've ever had, whether it was as a state representative or as city clerk or as controller of the state of Illinois, every time I tell taxpayers that I'm going to do something, for example, take on Bruce Rauner and navigate the state through the worst fiscal crisis in our history, I've done it. I've underpromised and over-delivered, and I'll do the same as mayor.
Ms. Preckwinkle.
You know, we should have no tolerance for corruption in the city of Chicago. It's particularly important in a democracy that people have confidence in their government, and the swirling allegations and rumors undermine that confidence. Let me just say, I think the beginning has to be no dual employment. I was elected alderman in 1991. I've never held any outside employment. Never held any outside employment. And I think that's the critical step that we have to take. People shouldn't have to try to decide whether you're looking out for the interests of your clients or your constituents. It has to be focused on your constituency. And let me just say, you know, I have to say that if Ed Burke is guilty of the allegations that have been made against him, he ought to be in jail. You know, it's really important that government be, that people have confidence in their government, because government can really improve people's lives. And one of the challenges our city faces is opportunity. People in the city need to believe that there's opportunity for themselves and for their children. That's one of the reasons that I support a $15 an hour minimum wage, and why I've said that we need to implement that by 2021.
Mr. Ballas.
Great. Well, first of all, you've got to make institutional changes. So nothing controls finance campaign reform better than term limits. Term limits for the mayor, term limits for the alderman. You also have to term limit these committee assignments. You also have to eliminate aldermanic privilege, because it's just legalized corruption. You have to ban outside income, not only for aldermen, but also ban aldermen giving contracts and hiring individuals who work for them, who are in their families. You know, and you have to have full transparency. And that begins with disclosing your income taxes. But, you know, the fundamental question of why me over other candidates, well, you know, when I ran the Chicago Public Schools, I pulled all the construction projects out of the Public Building Commission so I could bid them fairly and openly. People are part of the pay-to-play culture. Don't go to New Orleans to rebuild the devastated Katrina, devastated city, or for that matter, go to Haiti after the earthquakes. So my entire career has been public service, and my entire career has been resisting the pay-to-play culture.
Mr. Wilson.
Well, the first thing I would do as become mayor would first put an audit in each department of City Hall every 3 months to make sure that things don't get out of hand, holding the people accountable. Next thing we would take to do is make sure in all 7-7 community that we have equality with job and contract that reflect all nationality. That's the next thing that we would do. And the other thing that we would make sure, we no more taxes. Jesus, you know, no more taxes, all right? Taxes so high, you run business out of the city. You run jobs out of the city for employees. You know, that's no way to go. If raising taxes haven't worked, the city become a place of people going out for the rich and not the poor and disadvantaged. Chicago must take and change its way of doing business. You know, we must make sure that we put a training program within the minority community to make sure that they can learn the trade, that they can get the job and do business to be able to take care of themselves. And we come as one city.
One quick follow-up to the panel. Ms. Perkwinkle mentioned the elephant in the room. That would be Alderman Burke. She's gotten dinged pretty bad for having taken money from Mr. Burke. Does anyone up here think that's disqualifying? Does anyone up there think that the fact that Ms. Perkwinkle
I returned all his money, and I've taken the strongest stand against him. I said, look, he ought to resign as chairman of the Finance Committee. He ought to resign as committeeman and alderman of the 14th Ward. And I pointed out that nobody should have dual employment, that this is a real challenge to our system and to our democracy. And I just said that if he's guilty of the crimes of which he's accused, he ought to be in jail.
Laurie?
Those are the strongest stands that anyone's taken against him. And as chairman of the party, I stripped him of his chairmanship of the Cook County Judicial Slating Committee.
Ms. Lightfoot, real quick.
With due respect, Madam President, you took those actions only after the red hot glare of publicity was shown on you. And only after I called for you to do it, you took weeks to even acknowledge that you got the money. And then, frankly, you threw Ann Burke under the bus. And then you said it was his husband.
Ann Burke has been a colleague
in our
efforts.
But you know that a justice running for reelection cannot solicit money. And the invitation to that fundraiser was Chairman Burke.
All right, let's give Tony Perkins the last word, and then we have to move on.
Say again.
You know, Ann Burke was an ally in our efforts to pursue criminal justice reform, and an invaluable ally, and offered to have a fundraiser at her house, and I accepted. As I said, I've returned all the money from the fundraiser, and I've taken the strongest stands against Ed Burke.
We should mention if any candidate is called out by name, we will give them 30 seconds to respond throughout the forum. You're listening to the Chicago Mayoral Forum, The Future of Chicago, hosted by Crane Chicago Business and WGN Radio. We're going to take a quick break here to go back to the studio, hear the news, a couple minutes more, then we'll come back and hear from the people who would like to be the next mayor of Chicago in a moment.
Back to the 2019 Chicago Mayoral Candidates Forum, presented by Cranes, from Venue 610 on WGN Radio.
All right, we're back here live with the candidates for mayor of the city of Chicago, the candidates who would like to be the next mayor of our beautiful city. This is the Mayoral Forum, sponsored by Crane Chicago Business and WGN Radio. I'm Anna DeVlantis, along with Greg Hines from Cranes. And our next question for the candidates has to do with differentiating you from the pack. Voters have a lot of choices this year. And with less than 3 weeks to go before the election, the latest polls show the number of undecideds far outweighs the support for any single candidate. So a lot of undecided voters out there, 26% according to one of the latest polls, one in four voters. Speak to those voters and tell them why you should be the next mayor of Chicago. Let's begin with Bill Daley this time.
Thank you. If you look at my career, most of my career has been spent in the private sector, in banking, in telecom, in law. I took a very different path than other family members who were career politicians. I went a different way, but yet I was Commerce Secretary running a 45,000-person worldwide organization. I was Chief of Staff to the President, and I've been around politics and government my whole life, so I know politics. I don't think there's any doubt that just because someone's in business, they have some great talent to govern, as proven at the national level and proven in the state the last 4 years. But I think the combination that I have of knowing this city, loving this city, knowing it, living in it my entire life, and that combination of being around government and politics, but yet also being heavily into business over the years, is a unique combination to lead this city, and I'd appreciate the opportunity to do that.
Dr. Amara Enya.
Chicagoans have expressed a number of things. One is that the status quo has not worked for far too many across the city. People want to move the city in a different direction, and we need new ideas and new vision to move into the future. So we know that we have to move away from the status quo. I represent a change from the status quo. Two, we actually need bold solutions, not just critiques of things as they are, but things that address the structural challenges that we face, everything from our finances to the state of our economy to education, housing, across the board. I have the broad-based public policy experience in almost every area of policy, at the top government level, which I've worked, but also all the way down to the grassroots level where I've organized. We need someone who understands the connection between those who are affected by policy and those who make policy. And finally, we need leadership that can move the city together into the future. This means a leader who is able to excite people in neighborhoods across the city with a vision and message that brings them out to the polls. This is why our campaign has resonated, and this is what I bring.
Lori Lightfoot, same question. Speak to those undecided voters who are trying to understand why you are the right person to lead this city.
Look, we have an incredibly great city in a number of different ways. But unfortunately, that greatness isn't spread throughout our communities evenly. As a person who grew up in a working-class family, whose family struggled mightily financially and lived paycheck to paycheck, I understand what's happening in many of our neighborhoods. There are too many families that look like mine, with individuals who look like me, who are really struggling to catch on and take advantage of the opportunities that, frankly, in a lot of neighborhoods don't exist. I believe that there is a moral imperative for us to make sure that we provide true opportunity to people all across the city, and frankly, not just in the downtown area or on the north side. I also think, frankly, that there's a financial imperative. What we're seeing in our city is a growing difference between the haves and the have-nots. And if we don't do something about that now to fill that void, the financial burden on, frankly, the haves is going to be profound, and the needs of the people who are in the have-nots is just going to continue to grow. We can do better in this city.
Gary McCarthy.
I am not a politician. I'm a public servant. I spent 35 years policing in three major cities in this country. I worked to the top of the NYPD. I ran New York City's crime strategy for 7 years. From there, I went to Newark, New Jersey, with a fellow named Cory Booker, who you may have heard of, and ran that department for 5 years. And I came here and ran Chicago PD for almost 5 years. I'm a crisis manager. I've managed response to hurricanes, floods, riots, blackouts, leadership at the NATO summit, and unfortunately, the granddaddy of them all, the World Trade Center. I helped lead the response by New York City to that particular event. We need business management, not politics as usual here in Chicago, because those politics as usual is what's gotten us to this place. I'm obviously not part of the machine. I'm not from here. I'm still hearing that 8 years later. But at this point, it's fashionable. Thank you.
Susana Mendoza, same question.
From the Bronx. I'm running for mayor of Chicago because the future of Chicago is at stake. I'm concerned about not just the next 4 years, but the next generation. And I truly believe that this is no time to elect a caretaker mayor or someone who represents the status quo. The issues that we all care about, violence, under-resourced schools, crushing property taxes, those aren't just issues to me, they're personal. And while we may have a lot of challenges in Chicago, there's none that we can't overcome together. I believe in the promise of this city. And I believe that I bring the level of experience, the level of passion and energy to get the job done for that next generation. As the controller of the state of Illinois, I've been managing the state through the worst fiscal crisis in its history, and I've given the markets calm at a time when people said that would be impossible. So I'm more than equipped to handle the financial challenges dealing with the city and the challenges that impact neighborhoods, because I'm from a neighborhood, I understand neighborhoods, and I'm going to put them first. And especially as a mother of a six-year-old in CPS, this will be the first time in the history of our city that we have a mayor, certainly in my lifetime, who has a child in the CPS system.
Tony Preckwinkle, the undecided voters.
What's sure. You know, we live in a beautiful city with great neighborhoods, but our city is at a crossroads. And the lens through which I look at our challenges, it's an equity lens. I'm the most progressive candidate in this race. You know, I got elected on my third try. I beat the machine after three tries by 109 votes. In the city council, I was the founder of the Progressive Caucus. I sponsored and worked hard for every affordable housing and living wage measure that came before the body. I was one of five votes, five out of 50, against the parking meter deal. And I worked with residents in my community as aldermen to strengthen our neighborhood schools. I'm a teacher by profession. We worked to revitalize communities that were struggling, worked with community residents, with developers, with the Chicago Housing Authority. We built 1,500 units of housing, most of it affordable rental housing, some of it mixed income, some of it market rate. And we worked with local commanders and officers and community residents to address the public safety challenges that our communities faced. And these are the same challenges that the next mayor of the city of Chicago will face: strengthening our neighborhood schools, revitalizing our communities, and addressing the challenges of police-community relations.
Paul Vallis.
My entire career has been one of a major problem solver. You know, I've balanced $17 billion, multi-billion dollar budgets in four different cities and have done earthquake relief work in two different countries. Every single public service challenge by invitation. And in all, I've not only been successful at writing the financial conditions, but also allocating resources in ways that have benefited the entire communities that I've served. I've also painstakingly laid out a detailed plan since I announced in April on how I will balance the budget, how I will address the pension funding issues, how I will restore the public safety resources that have been diminished over the years, how I will develop an economic development strategy that will benefit the 80% of the city that's been neglected. I've painstakingly offered specific solutions to every problem that we are confronted today. And I've done it to lay all the cards on the table, because it's so important that we run an issue-oriented campaign.
Willie Wilson.
Well, the first thing I would do, we have to balance the budget. We'll balance the budget without raising taxes, because when you raise taxes, you run people out of the city. How you would deal with that is that you have a $10 billion roughly budget.
We are going to get to budgets coming up, but this is more speaking to those undecided voters, why it is that convincing your case, how you're best equipped to lead the city.
You took up some of my time.
And we'll add it for you, I promise. We'll add that on there. Timekeeper, duly noted. Thank you. Very fair process.
You got more minutes.
You better go.
All right. Well, okay. Fairness, all right? Getting the crime down. I come to the table as a business person, not a politician. I've used pretty much 100% of my own money. I would not take other people's money and be accountable to them. That'd be a promise. We must make sure that we are free from outside sources, but put the citizens of Chicago first. And we will continue to do that. Fairness is what it takes, but you have to make sure that you're not part of a machine. They're going to dictate to you and tell you what to do. You must let the people dictate to you first. Now, I heard one of the opponents here said that she's not part of the machine, but she's the chairman of the machine. You know, so that doesn't make sense. All right? We will tackle all of these problems, and we'll put an investigation to get our citizen money back and we'll raise no taxes.
Oh, yes. I got elected committeeman in 1992. And, you know, it was a real challenge because the Democratic Party wasn't very responsive to African Americans. And frankly, I am grateful for the opportunity to lead the party because I've taken my progressive credentials into the party. I mean, one of the first things we did was pass a sexual harassment policy. And the second thing we did was create a retention committee. For the first time, the Democratic Party said we're not going to automatically retain judges. We're going to try to hold judges accountable for their behavior. And the Democratic Party, in conjunction with advocates in the community, decided that we would not support a judge for retention, and that judge was not reelected. That judge had a checkered past as an assistant state's attorney, and on the bench, harsh sentences and disparate sentences for black and brown defendants. So I'm proud of that.
Thank you, Tony. Was Willie speaking about you, Susanna? You want to have a moment to respond to that?
I would, because, I mean, you can't really call yourself a progressive and then have challenged two of the leading, you know, women of color on this panel. You only challenged five women of color and no one else. And we had absolutely legitimate petitions, yet had to go through this nonsense, which is really part of the politics of the past. You know, we don't need more of that. At this point, you are literally the boss of the party bosses. You even own that in your own commercial. So what you may have started off as a reformer, President Preckwinkle, but you've gone completely regressive, not progressive at all.
You know, Tony. Look, the two things that I've worked on for the last 8 years, the two things that I've worked on are the sustainability of our health care system and criminal justice reform. We now have a health care system
and the
that's
going
to give Tony a chance to respond. I mean, and then we have to get to Gary Chico, who hasn't even had a chance to answer the
right
question yet. I mean, this poor guy is sitting over here, yes, like, come on.
You know, look, excuse me. So the two things that we've worked on in the county, I think, are really progressive. One is to try to be sure that health care is accessible and good quality health care is accessible to as many people as possible. We have 330,000 people in our Medicaid expansion program, County Care. The second thing is criminal justice reform. And we now have 4,000 fewer people in the jail because people accused of nonviolent crimes are much less likely to be held in jail as a result of the reforms we've made. So
now,
access to health care and criminal justice.
We have to cut you off there. Willie, here are the rules again. Willie Wilson called out somebody, and I don't believe several people felt they were being called out, but I think Tony and Susanna, maybe you're calling out everybody, but it did seem like two individuals in particular. So you get 30 seconds to respond, which I think we've offered now, and we'd like to get to Gary Chico. The same question, if you need a reminder, undecided voters, by the way, this was the question, number more than 25% of, according to latest polls. So let those voters know why they need to pick you with less than 3 weeks to go.
Thank you. I believe my life and professional experiences uniquely qualified me to be the mayor of this city. My grandparents came here from Mexico, settled on the southwest side so that they could find a better job in the stockyards. All I saw them do and all I saw my parents do was work. I learned an incredible work ethic from them. And it was that work ethic that propelled me to get through the CPS, graduate from the CPS, be the first in my family to go on to college and law school. And further, that same work ethic helped me be the chief of staff for this city and bring in community policing. It helped me be the chairman of the Chicago Public Schools and make it what President Clinton called a model for the nation. I'd like to take that experience again and drive these issues that we've been talking about today, starting with tackling corruption head on. Rebuilding our Chicago public schools, I want to do it on a vocational and technical education platform and do it all while we're not breaking the backs of the working families in this city with more and more taxes.
Thank you.
All right. It looks like everybody had their caffeine today, so let's keep going if we can. The next question has to do with the budget. We all carry wallets or purses, and all of us who live in Chicago know they're considerably lighter than they used to be.
We've passed enacted well over $500 million in tax increases in recent years, yet the city still has a big budget problem, in large part, not exclusively, but in large part, due to deferred pension payments that we're now starting to catch up with. The question is, all of you are pretty much in favor of some of the low-hanging fruit out there. If the state passes a graduated income tax, you'll take the money. If the state legalizes the sale of marijuana for recreational use, you'll take the taxes. Most of you are in favor of the gambling casino and revenue that would bring. But that's not enough, particularly since almost all of you want to leave the pension funding, the payments, unchanged. You don't want to reopen the Constitution. So the question is, excluding that low-hanging fruit, how are you going to balance a budget? Amara, Andrew, you start.
So we balance the budget by addressing the long-term structure of the city's economy to make sure that it is sustainable for the future. What I've proposed, in addition to some of the low-hanging fruit that you mentioned, is actually changing the way the city finances its infrastructure projects, actually moving us away from a traditional private financial institution to a public bank. Right now, we pay billions of dollars in infrastructure projects and 40 to 50% in cost overruns on those projects to private financial institutions. With the level of upgrades that need to happen in infrastructure, we should be funding our own projects, and any interest is recirculated back into the Treasury as revenue. In addition, we have to create a growth economy. This includes expanding the economic ecosystem by incorporating different models of ownership, cooperatively owned businesses, changing the ownership of land models in communities so that you're building generational wealth, which allows people to have the kind of income, household income, to pay their taxes, to pay their fees, and to actually support local businesses. Third is we actually have to support our local business infrastructure.
Thank you. Lori Lightfoot.
The challenge, and I think underpinning of your question, is the reality is the casino, the progressive income tax, legalizing marijuana is not going to come online in time for us to deal with the challenges that the next mayor is going to face when she takes office in May. And we're going to have to come up with hundreds of millions of dollars to deal with the pension obligation that we have looming in 2020. So what are we going to do? The reality is we're going to have a conversation about revenue. But I think you have to build the case for revenue. You can't just tell people, hey, that change in your pocket, it's now mine. How do we get there? We demonstrate that we are actually taking our fiscal responsibility seriously. We have to deal with the burgeoning problem of police settlements, judgments, and attorney's fees, $50 to $60 million every single year. Police overtime, fire overtime, runaway lawsuits that are breaking our bank. We also need to make sure that we start thinking about consolidating the administrative and investment functions of the four pension funds. There's a lot more that I can say, and I'll try to get back to it in the next round.
Gary McCarthy.
So the first thing we need to do to solve every single problem that we have in Chicago is to go legit. The corruption is bleeding this city dry in every area, and that includes our economy. Trying to get permits for builders, you got to have a guy. Try to get a sidewalk done, you got to go to a guy. None of this is okay. It starts there. The second thing is we've got to stop borrowing to pay our debt. I want you to take all your MasterCards, put all your costs for a year on that, and then use your Visa to pay it at the end of the year. That's what we've done here. We've got to stop political spending and vanity projects and do needs-based spending to invest in the neighborhoods to create economies so that we can stimulate growth in the outer parts of the city, not just focusing on downtown. We can hold on to downtown and do that in the neighborhoods. And the TIF slush fund has to be used according to the law, which means blighted neighborhoods, but for the TIF funding, they remain blighted.
Thank you. Susana Mendoza.
Thank you. Again, this issue is that we have to come up with $400 million pretty much soon after getting elected. And so obviously the long-term financials are there. A lot of us support them. But on the short term, we have to look at every financial tool that we have available. One of the tools that I utilized and that I championed as controller was a bonding deal. And while the bonding deal that's been talked about so far has really zero details surrounding it, which is why nobody could support it as is, I do think that we have to be realistic of what other tools are available that can get us to that $300 to $400 million that we'll need pretty much soon after being sworn in. So I would put forth at least some, we're going to take a close look and potentially looking at a bonding deal. At the city, at the state level, we save $4 to $6 billion for taxpayers by doing that. It's not an apples to apples, but I think the key is to be transparent with the public as to what our limited options are, to walk the public through how they would work, and more importantly, what happens if we don't do those options, because the consequences are going to be severe going into a potential economic downturn.
Thank you. Again, the question for our audience is, after you grab the low-hanging fruit, how do you balance the budget? Tony Perkwinkel.
Well, I think we have to look at this through an equity lens and understand that it's about shared sacrifice. You know, there are no magic solutions, no silver bullets. We're going to have to look at a variety of options. And starting at the state level, we need a progressive income tax. You know, we need that not just because the state is in fiscal difficulty, but also because the state shares revenue with local units of government, city, towns, and villages. And we want that revenue to be raised as equitably as possible, and that's a progressive income tax. You know, as I said, at the local level, there are no magic solutions, no silver bullets, but a number of things I've talked about. One is TIF reform. You know, one-third, about 31% of our property tax base now goes into sequestered TIF districts. And this was supposed to be an economic investment tool that catalyzed development in struggling communities. But almost all the downtown is now in TIF districts. So we have to unwind the TIFs. We have to declare TIF surpluses. We have to unlock this revenue. We have to look at efficiencies in local government. And the workman's comp program is an example. There are 22,000 county employees, $20 million, 33,000 city employees, and five times as much.
Mr. Valls.
You know, besides the give and take, we're going to have 4.5 minutes to answer four questions in 1 minute to talk about how we're going to address our financial issues. So let me just say this. Please go to my website, valisforallchicago.com. The approach that I'm going to take is basically threefold. One is I'm going to lay out a legislative agenda. That's doable because I spent 12 years working for Don Clark Netsch in the state legislature, and I know what the legislature can give us, primarily protecting our revenues because the state has been taking or blocking us from accessing revenues that we're entitled to, number one. Number two, I've laid out a plan on how I'm going to structurally balance the budget. And I'm one who took a $1.4 billion structural deficit in Chicago Public Schools in 5 years, and six years later, I left the district with $1 billion in cash balances and 13 bond rating upgrades. And then number three, I've painstakingly laid out how I'm going to rebuild the police department, how I'm going to do economic development, how I'm going to do infrastructure, and how I'm going to do affordable housing. So at the end of the day, I've articulated in great detail how I'm going to address these issues.
Willie Wilson, I have a hunch you want to talk about this one?
Sir. Well, look, a lot of people up here don't know nothing about balancing no budget because they've been in their job too long and ain't balanced nothing now. All right? So how are you going to balance a budget you've been in a job and talk about balancing now? Right? What you have to do with this here, City of Chicago got roughly, let's say, $10 billion budget. $7 billion of that is in payroll. Ridiculous. $7 billion. We have to get that number down. San Francisco and some of the other places, maybe like $3 or $4 billion, all right? And there's other places. But when you have taxes high, you know, your budget out of line, you got to work with the union and work together, get that number down, right? You got to take them lower taxes to get new business here in the United States as well as international. The people in Chicago now is going to Indiana buying gasoline, all right, and shopping over there because of taxes running to other friendly states. That's where we get this budget down.
Thank you, sir. Garachico.
I've had the privilege of probably balancing 20 budgets in my career in government, and none of them have been easy. They all have challenges at the outset. If you just look back over the last 6-7 years in the city of Chicago, the average budget deficit beginning the year was about $350 million. Right now, we're looking at about $250 to $300 million. We have to approach it three ways. One, generate new revenue that doesn't break the backs of the working families in this city, which is why I've said end the corrupt property tax assessment system here. Right now, as we sit here, these commercial office buildings are getting an enormous break, which means that it all rolls down to the citizens in the neighborhoods to pick it up. We can end that and put more money in our treasury. Secondly, a 1% tax on million-dollar home sales to generate $150 million a year. Eliminate waste. Get rid of the infrastructure trust. Get rid of the clerks and treasurer's offices. $15 million a year right there. There's ways to do this. It is not impossible. You need the experience.
Mr. Daley.
I agree that there are a whole host of things we can do in the short term to address the hole that's in the budget for 2020. I think they've been laid out. I've laid a bunch of them out. But when you look at the long-term situation of our city, and the state's much worse, obviously, I'm the only one, I believe I'm the only one, who has said, I believe we've got to change the Constitution, not because I want to screw the retirees. There's 50,000 retirees in the city of Chicago, 35,000 active employees, 85,000 people, 3% of the population, representing $28 billion around the neck of this city long term. To have an honest negotiation with labor about both sides of the equation, revenue and expenses, you must change that. Again, not that it's on the back of the retirees, but unless we can have an honest negotiation, an honest discussion with our friends in labor, we cannot move forward to solve this problem. Long-term future of the city is at risk because of that.
All right, we're going to take a break here in just a few minutes, and then toss it back to the WGN newsroom for a news break. But then we'll have more from the Mayoral Forum, the future of Chicago, and our candidates, hosted by Crane Chicago Business and WGN Radio. Back with more in a moment.
Back to the 2019 Chicago Mayoral Candidates Forum, presented by Cranes, from Venue 610 on WGN Radio.
Back live broadcasting from the Chicago Mayoral Forum, the future of Chicago, hosted by Crane Chicago Business and WGN Radio. We have with us the people who would like to be the next mayor of Chicago, and we're addressing the key issues, some of the key issues, as many as we can get to tonight, facing our city. The next question concerns crime and public safety. The vast majority of violent crimes in our city are committed by a small percentage of individuals, often repeat offenders, repeat felons, who can wreak havoc on neighborhoods. What is your plan to address these individuals to make our neighborhoods safer? And I believe this round we start with, Greg, you keeping track of this?
Lori Lightfoot.
Well, one of the things that we have to do is make sure that we are really providing support for the returning citizens. You know, your question underlying it is this recidivism issue, right? So we have literally thousands of people that come back into the city of Chicago every single day from the Illinois Department of Corrections, as well as, frankly, people who are getting out of Cook County, and there's no support for them. So if we don't do something to address that population in some pretty specific ways, by providing them with real support, by lowering the barriers for them to get jobs, like being a barber, things that require licensing that are difficult at the state level, we're going to continue to see this issue. But fundamentally, what we need to do is treat the epidemic of crime that we've been seeing as a public health crisis. If we do that, we're going to start looking at the root causes of crime. And we have to invest in neighborhoods. But what we also have to do is this. We have to have a proactive plan for gun violence, which we don't have right now. That means our federal partners have to step up in a significant way in partnership with the local police.
Gary McCarthy.
So you already know the first answer. We need legitimacy in city government if we're going to reduce crime in this city, because you cannot have legitimate policing under an illegitimate government, which unfortunately we've had for decades. So that's the first thing we need to do. The second thing that we need to do is acknowledge and address the social economic divide that exists not just in this city but in this country, which is the source of anger in the disenfranchised communities that are overrun by crime, lack of hope, lack of jobs, lack of education, breakup of the family unit, narcotics, and so on. Everything, lead in the water, lead in the air. All of this has to be addressed with the start of having some very difficult conversations about how we got here as a nation. Third thing is functional policing, data-driven policing that's focused on who, when, and where crime is being committed. And last but not least, we need criminal justice reform that focuses on keeping violent criminals in jail while lowering the sanctions for low-level narcotics use.
Susana Mendoza.
Thank you. I would agree that we do need to tackle the issue of recidivism. You know, that's one of the reasons why I've spent a lot of time and energy prioritizing organizations like the Safer Foundation, who work with returning citizens to make sure that they don't keep cycling in and out of the correctional facility. At the same time, we do need to have tough gun laws that make sure that people who pick up a gun and shoot someone, that there are consequences to that. But that's even more so a reason why we can't give up on folks like that, and we have to continue to make sure that when they do reenter into society, that they have the greatest opportunity to succeed and not reenter into that vicious cycle. Most importantly, we have to acknowledge what's the root cause of violence to begin with, and it's disinvestment in our neighborhoods. It's the lack of hope, the absolute feeling of invisibility that many people feel in these neighborhoods. And it, unfortunately, wasn't done by accident. Our city is so segregated by design, and that needs to end. So I look forward to, as mayor, really investing, especially on the west and the south side of the city, where those folks have been so socio and economically disenfranchised.
Tony Preckwinkle.
You know, I'm a teacher by profession, and early in my teaching career, I lost a student to gun violence. She was killed in a drive-by. She was in the wrong place at the wrong time on her own front porch, and it was devastating for our school community. You know, this is a social justice issue. People have the right to feel safe in their homes and in their communities, and fundamentally, that's the responsibility of the mayor. You know, the best crime-fighting tool is real police-community collaboration. And we can't really reduce crime without it. And frankly, Chicago's a perfect example. We've spent all this money on shot spotters and cameras and surveillance, and yet we have more murders than New York and Los Angeles combined. And furthermore, we don't solve very many of our murders. The national average is about 62-63%. In Chicago, it's 15%. 15%. You know, there's no way we're going to get a handle on this unless we have better police-community relations. Because the truth is that if people are mistrustful of police and wary, they won't talk to them, and the police can't solve crimes.
Paul Vallis.
Look, you know, we have to get at the underpinnings of crime, and that means we've got to invest in the 80% of the city that hasn't seen any investment. The investment's only been occurring in 20% of the city, and there are areas of the city that have been in deep states of economic depressions for decades. So we have to, and that's why I've spent as much time as I've had laying out my Marshall Plan for the west sides and the south sides. Secondly, we've got to deal with the population of ex-offenders. And those, in 60-70% of the individuals in the Rosen Pullman community are in some phase of the criminal justice system in terms of the men. But we've got to have programs. We've got to have reentry programs. That's why I spent a year working for the Justice Department with Sally Yates on just that very same issue. The third thing is we've got to rebuild our police department to ensure that we have enough officers so we have beat integrity. We have beat integrity, we have enough detectives, we need to bring retired detectives to work these cases so we can increase, we can improve the clearance rate, 17% clearance rates on murders. And the fourth thing that we need to do is we need to get serious about charging people who commit crimes with firearms and ensuring that they get sentenced appropriately. Thank you.
Question is, crime and public safety making neighborhoods safer? Willie Wilson.
Well, the first thing I would not do is add more police officers. Instead of adding more police officers, put the resources into the community contract and job. If you can take care of O'Hare with $8.5 billion, you can certainly put $1 billion or $2 into those communities where crime exists. I've gotten a lot of people out of jail. You know, spend hundreds of thousands of dollars getting them out of jail. All they tell me, look, give them a job once they get out. Because you go right back in there and they 4 or 5 months, they back there, they say, we didn't need a job to get out. So I'd say put the resources in there, then you won't have those crimes. The rate will come down. If you eat food and you're full, there's no need for you to go and steal food from somebody else, all right? But not only that, for the misdemeanor nonviolent on some of this as well, we got to also deal with the crime as related to white-collar crime. Them the one you should be putting in jail, you know?
Thank you, Willie Wilson. Gary Chico, we have the same question for you about crime and safe neighborhoods.
I'll take a slightly different tack than Willie on this. There's a history of segregation in this city that has led to an uneven distribution of resources and opportunities, and we see that across our city and how bereft some of the communities are. But it doesn't have to be that way. I've proposed in several ways dramatic development in parts of the city that will bring jobs. I've talked about a vocational and trade school campus on the west side. I've talked about building a casino that the city would own that would be operated professionally. There's thousands of jobs in those kinds of projects. But really, when you look forward, we have people right now who have gotten off the path because of that history. We need to deal with them and help them. The Heartland Alliance has a program called Ready, which right now only operates out of private money. 500-600 people in that program recruited from gangs. I want the city to put in $50 million to scale that program, to work with the Safer Foundation, the Safe Haven Foundation, and Arne Duncan's CRED. We can save people now.
Bill Daley.
No doubt about it. The roots of crime and the roots of the difficulty we're having in this city are very complex. The economic needs in neighborhoods, no doubt about that. At the same time, today, if you're caught in possession of a gun and you don't have a right to have one, it is a misdemeanor in Illinois. So the message is, it's not that serious of a crime. I think we have to get much more serious about the gun issue because it is destroying parts of our city. Obviously, families are affected forever. It is a terrible situation, but it's gone beyond just guns. And I've laid out a plan on the crime issues, on guns, on the better training for our police officers, more technology, and the same sort of violence prevention that I've mentioned is CRED, $50 million. I said months ago I'd put that in, and a deputy mayor run that program. It's basically a version of the old ceasefire, for those of you who may remember in the 80s. The reason it didn't succeed then, police department did not sign on board to it. Los Angeles and New York use their violence prevention program and think it's a big part of the crime differential between us and those two cities.
Amara Anya.
Targeted economic investment in communities that have been disinvested for decades ensures that people can plug into the economy. At the same time, we have to expand access to not only vocational education programs, but on-ramps into high-value-add sectors of the economy that do not require a college degree, such as advanced manufacturing, information technology, and coding. I've worked across the board on those sorts of workforce initiatives. Moreover, we have to expand access to mental health resources in our schools and in our communities. If we're talking about ways to reduce violence. We spend right now $40,000 per person incarcerating individuals. We also have police in schools when we should actually be expanding restorative justice programs in our schools that teach things like conflict resolution and divert people away from the criminal justice system so that they don't have to navigate through that system at the back end. We have to remove barriers at the state level to be an entrepreneur, even if you have a record. That means being able to get access to licenses so that you can support yourself if you have been in contact with the justice system. These are just parts of what's necessary to address crime and violence.
We have a little bit of extra time before we go to closing statements, so we're going to do a little lightning round. You folks have been on the campaign trail so long and seen each other on so many occasions, you probably know each other better than some of you know your spouses. So my question is, and we're going to start with Mr. McCarthy and go around, if you couldn't vote for yourself, who would you vote for in this group?
Tough one.
I didn't hear the last part, so I'm going to say my wife, Kristen. How's that? What's your name? That's a tough question. I think I would go with Amara.
Amara Anya is Gary McCarthy's pick.
Susana Mendoza.
I think Gary learned from me. I said Amara last time. So...
Tony Preckley.
Today.
Paul.
Paul Ballas.
Thank you. I'm not going to try to offend Tony here, but I will not vote for anyone who entered the race after Rahm Emanuel dropped out.
Okay. So Lily Wilson.
Do you have a pick, Paul?
That's his
pick.
I would just do like the Chicago politics do. I'd give myself another name and re-vote for myself.
An honest man, he says, I say parenthetically. Gary Chico. Couldn't vote for yourself? Who'd you vote for?
No, I would vote for Amara Anya.
Popular choice.
Bill Daley.
Lori Lightfoot.
Lori Lightfoot, that is his choice. Miss Amara Anya, who'd you vote for?
So I would actually echo Paul. I would have to use an arbitrary measure because there are a lot of solid candidates, but the date of whether you are willing to challenge the incumbent is really important to me.
And Lori Lightfoot.
I'm going to sound just like Amara and Paul. Look, we have a lot of challenges in the city, and the challenges were exactly the same the day before Rahm Emanuel got out, the day he got in, and the day after. I think if you care about our city and you believe that you have a vision to lead, then you jump into the fray before Goliath is slayed. So it's disqualifying in my mind, and I have a lot of respect for people who did jump in after, but that's the line of demarcation for me.
All right, we have 45 seconds each for the candidates to make their closing arguments, if you will, to speak directly to the voters about you and why you. Willie Wilson, we'll begin with you.
Yeah, this is our last time?
Last time, 45 seconds, final pitch.
All right, I'm going to do what I do best, and that is, dear Lord, we thank you for guiding us. We thank you for this day. We thank you, dear Lord, for the people who allow us to come here on this special day that you have made. And bless us all and guide us as we get ready to leave here and go home. And if we go home tonight, dear Lord, put your angels around us and guide us so we can wake up tomorrow morning. Teach us, oh Lord, to still love one another regardless of how things come out today. And dear Lord, we thank you for your grace and your mercy and your kindness. And bless us all and take care of all. Guide us home tonight. In Jesus' name we pray for his sakes. Amen.
Exactly a minute. Thank you. Amen. Let's go to Gary Chico. Same question. 45 seconds, your closing argument.
My roots are in the neighborhoods and streets of this city, and I'm very proud of my family heritage and the work ethic that they gave me. I've used that work ethic to lead in every government assignment I've been asked to serve in. We brought community policing to the city to make our city safer. We made the Chicago Public Schools a model for the nation. And it's time to do it again. We can do it again. And I want to lead. And I want to make this city, I'm the eternal optimist. I believe this city's best days are ahead of it. We have to deal with the corruption we've talked about. We have to take the Chicago Public Schools in a bigger direction, starting with vocational and technical education. And we have to do it all while we're not breaking the backs of our working families. They are not lazy. They are not ATM machines for lazy government.
Bill Daley.
I would be honored if you would vote for me and could be the mayor of the city of Chicago. I grew up in this city. I know this city. I love this city. I spent my life around politics and government, but not as part of it on a day-to-day basis. We have enormous problems. I do believe we have a great city. We've got to address them. The issues that we've talked about tonight are, you all know, and I think it's time that we begin to structurally do some things differently as I have laid out around governing this city. Ethics issues, no doubt about it. We've got to address them aggressively. But we also have to bring hope to people in neighborhoods that have not have had hope. And at the same time, keeping our economic growth. If we slow that, if that slows down, the ability to do all those great things we talk about will not be able to be done by any mayor of this city.
Amara Enya.
We are at a crucial time in the city's history where we can determine the direction, not just for next year, but for the next couple of generations. And what we need is visionary leadership with new ideas, better ideas that move us forward on the challenging issues that we face. We need excitement and enthusiasm about the kind of government that we deserve. The people want the right kind of experience that is broad-based. I've worked in government. I've worked in the nonprofit sector, in the public sector, at the grassroots level. We need that well-rounded perspective to really understand the systemic nature of our issues. But most importantly, we need the right values. Values of equity, values of justice, values of our shared progress. It is those values that will drive us into the future with the optimism that's necessary to execute our plan. Thank you.
Lori Lightfoot.
What people all over the city have told me since May of 2018 when I got into this race is that they want a government who hears them, who sees them, and they want a leader who listens. What people have also told me is they want a change from the past. They want a new direction and a new vision. This is the first competitive election that we're going to have in the city since 1986 when Harold Washington ran for a second term. We truly do have the opportunity to speak our values. But the difference is going to be this. If you want change, but you're resigned that the status quo is going to prevail, then the status quo will prevail, and you got an a la carte menu of choices for that. But if you are with me and you are resolved to vote your values, to bring people to the polls and make a difference, then we can make profound change in this city. Join with me.
Gary McCarthy.
Honesty, integrity, truth-telling, and leadership have to be restored to city government. The distrust that exists as far as government goes here is overwhelming, and we accept it. The Chicago way has to end. We have to bring management to government. We have to manage resources. We have to make tough decisions, and they're not political decisions. Those are reality-based decisions. We need to move this city forward with integrity. Until we do that, nothing is going to change here. And you're not going to change what's happening here unless you change the people. The bottom line is the things that we've been doing has not worked. We need values in our government. We need the government to serve the people and not the other way around.
Susana Mendoza.
Thank you. I'm so excited about the potential for our city, and that's why I firmly believe that this election is about the next generation and not just the next 4 years. I'm the one candidate up here who knows how to navigate the ins and outs of getting legislation passed in Springfield more than anybody else, and that will be an important skill set to have in your next mayor. I've also, as I said earlier, managed the state through the worst fiscal crisis in its history and been able to take on a governor who is intent on hurting our finances, a governor that actually... One of my candidates here, Mr. Daley, was the chairman of his transition committee. We don't need more of that. We need to actually focus on the problems of this city. And it's not like passing, you know, selling off assets like our parking meters, but actually putting the people of Chicago first. I'm the dare to get that done.
Would you like a bonus?
Something clear.
Yeah, let's do
it. I agreed to co-chair his transition as a Democrat, because I believe when someone wins an election and is over, we should join together and not continue the BS that goes on in politics and help a governor. He did not turn out what any of us, many of us, thought he would be.
He was terrible.
When J.B. Pritzker picked Republicans on his transition team, did you attack him for that?
No, of course not.
I was busy taking him on when you were just being quiet about it, Bill, with all due respect. What was that?
I said I was busy taking him on while you stood silent.
We're going to have to leave it there in order to get up to everyone while we're still on the broadcast. Tony Preckwinkle, closing argument.
You know, I'm a teacher by profession. I spent 10 years in the classroom, and I think it's really critical for the health of and thriving of our city that we have great neighborhood schools. We put a lot of energy in the last years around magnet schools and selective enrollment schools and charter schools, and we've got to invest in neighborhood schools. Every kid has the right to go to a great neighborhood school. And right now, you can pretty much predict the quality of education that's available to young people by the zip code they live in, just like you can predict their life expectancy. So we have to invest in neighborhood schools. We cannot have a strong city. We cannot have a vital, thriving city without strong neighborhoods, and we can't have strong neighborhoods without strong neighborhood public schools.
Paul Vallis.
I figure through all these forums I've been to, I've been able to speak for about an hour and 15 minutes. Think about that for a second. 1 minute answers, 90 second answers, 30
a lot of
second
candidates.
Answers. You know, look, I am beyond, I do not have the capacity to speak in slogans or to, you know, all I have the capacity to do is to offer real substantive solutions to complicated problems. And I've done it from the beginning. You know, someone joked that every single time I open my mouth, a white paper falls out. Well, yes, it does, because I'm not going to be condescending. You have got to do your homework here, because you're going to be inundated with commercials, not by me, and you're going to be inundated with these one-minute answers. This election is about substance. This election is about real solutions to complicated problems. And at the end of the day, we're all going to have to do our homework to make the right choice.
Folks, at a time when our city is going through a difficult period, when people don't have a lot of faith in politics, if nothing else, you have some choices here. You've heard some really clear differences and some positions. I encourage all of you to voters to go on their websites and do research yourself. I also urge you to vote. Vote early if you want, but only once. It's still Chicago. Only once.
And visit Crane Chicago Business and WGN Radio. We do have a rundown of all of the candidates. For the purposes of broadcast, we just want to wrap things up here, although publisher Jim Kirk will have some closing remarks right after that. But thank you to the candidates for participating tonight. Thanks to Crane Chicago Business, WGN Radio, Todd Manley. We thank you, our audience, for being here. And thank you to those joining us on WGN Radio.